As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
So on Monday, Leeds confirmed the sacking of their head coach, Jesse Marsh, after less than a year in charge. Meanwhile, there is also a battle for control going on in the boardroom at the club. So who is making the decisions? Where does the power lie? And who is being lined up to be the next boss? I'm Mark Chapman. This is the Athletic Football Podcast.
Forest was a defeat too far. It was a bad afternoon too far. I think it was a sort of poisonous reaction too far.
I obviously take responsibility and I have to find a way to get more out of us and make sure that when we're on top of games, we don't lose them.
I think he's got to go.
Leeds have confirmed that they have sacked Jesse Marsh.
Obviously, the 49ers have paid a lot of money already because they're up to 44%. And what the actual final buyout price would be exactly, we'll probably never know. But needless to say, if Leeds were to get relegated, and there is a serious chance of that this season, then they're not going to be worth £500 million.
There's a real opportunity here, or there seems to be a real opportunity here, you know, kind of winding their sails if they stay up, that Leeds sort of become America's team.
The idea was, as in when we buy out Radrizzani, we get a Premier League football club.
I think this manager decision, it's going to be a great indication of the state of play.
So to discuss everything going on at Leeds, we have our Leeds United writer, Phil Hay, and senior football news reporter, Matt Slater. Give me a timeline of this, first of all, the sacking, Phil, and who made the eventual decision.
You could say it's been going on since October, late October. I'm a bit like the Grim Reaper on this. Every time I turn up, people say, oh, Phil Hay's on the Athletic podcast. Leeds must be in crisis again. But I think the last time we spoke was after the two defeats back-to-back to Leicester and Fulham, and there'd been that particularly toxic reaction from the away end during the Leicester game. We discussed at the time, and I think I said that I saw it as difficult for Marsh to recover from that. And as much as once the away end...
Well, particularly, sorry to talk over you, but particularly, he looked, I mean, I've said this numerous times this week, he looked done in after the defeat at home to Fulham. I mean, I really struggle to remember a manager looking as tired and as shattered as he did at the end of that game.
Absolutely. And it's been like bouncing back and forward. He's had periods where he's recovered from that. But, you know, Forest was really the kind of third away-end mutiny that he'd faced. There'd been one at Aston Villa as well in January. Forest was a defeat too far. It was a bad afternoon too far. I think it was a sort of poisonous reaction too far. And really, you know, he'd been on pretty thin ice from Villa onwards, even though the club were signing players for him, even though, you know, literally 2 weeks ago they brought in Chris Armas as a new assistant for him. The way I see it is that there's a lot spoken constantly about how much time you're really given in the Premier League as a head coach. And Leeds have probably bucked the trend slightly by pushing on through this through periods where they could easily have sacked him previously, given him the best part of a year. But I think in the end, they haven't been able to see the woods for the trees. I think a lot of us on the outside have thought that this has been coming for a while. And I almost feel that now that Marsh has been sacked, that there has to be this moment of clarity at the club where they'll look at this the season so far and feel like they've wasted a lot of it. But I suspect with hindsight, you know, whether they stay up, whether they don't, how the rest of the season goes, they'll find themselves asking whether they should actually have done this sooner, because it feels like it's been in the post for quite a while.
So who made the decision to get rid?
In the end, the decision was Andrea Radrizzani's, the club chairman. I suspect we'll get into this in far more depth, but to a degree, everything or a lot at Leeds now, certainly at boardroom level, is being decided by committee or being decided, you know, in between the two sides who are there. So Radrizzani, who remains as majority shareholder at the moment, but 49ers Enterprises, the investment arm of the San Francisco 49ers, who have a very large minority stake, over 40%, and have this deal to buy the club, and this absolute intention to buy the club on the proviso at this stage that Leeds do stay in the Premier League. What it means is that everything has to be decided. It can't be unilaterally decided by Radrizzani when it comes to transfers or when it comes to head coaches. The discussion is constantly who is paying for what. What difference does, say, the signing of Weston McKennie or the signing of Jorginho Rutter, what difference does that make to the future purchase price that the 49ers Enterprises will pay? It's undoubtedly complicated. And I think it's a scenario that cannot persist too much longer. I think everybody would like that to be resolved, particularly 49ers Enterprises.
So we'll come back to Marsh in a little while and who might replace him. But the 49ers Enterprises and everything else that is going on above any head coach or manager at Leeds is probably where we should drill down first. Phil Matt says they have a 40% stake, a minority stake. Who are they? How close are they to the 49ers? Because it's not the actual NFL team. It's an investment arm, yes?
Yeah, correct. I mean, they're an interesting bunch. Who are they? Well, they, as you've both outlined, they are this sort of interesting little side hustle that the York family have got going on. It's kind of like a sort of family office stroke, yeah, you know, fund to go invest in sports, techie stuff, entertainment, media, you name it, that whole intersection of all the cool stuff that people like to consume. There are close ties. So the York family are the owners of the San Francisco 49ers, you know, long established, wealthy sports entrepreneur type family. And they put an awful lot of trust in a guy called Parag Marata, who we've spoken to on our podcast, very, really bright guy. He has a very
2 years ago this yeah, 2 years ago this very week was he it? Was on this is, podcast. Is, yeah.
You see how time flies. He's got like a full-time job running the 49ers at the actual NFL team, and they're pretty good. And he has this sort of interesting job where he looks after investments on behalf of the York family, but with other people who are not connected to San Francisco 49ers. And he's got this increasing role at Leeds United. He's interested in cricket. He's everywhere, right? He's interested in sort of trying to grow the game of cricket in the US. So the Leeds thing started, I started talking about it in 2017. I think they made their first investment in 2018. It was a 10% investment. We've seen these before. It's almost like they were one of the first ones of this most recent wave, which we are still experiencing, of massive US interest in the Premier League. Taking a little kind of seat around the table. Here's some money. We think there's something interesting going on in English Premier League. We think there's some similarities between what you guys are doing and what we can do. We can learn from you. You can learn from us. That kind of thing. And they sat very patiently, very quietly, and learned and sat there quite happily, it seemed, at a 10% holding. They already had a deal in place for a stage takeover, but there are options on both sides. You know, both sides have, you know, a say over how this deal would progress. But it seemed pretty clear. I can't remember the dates of all the steps, but they went a bit more, then they went a bit more again. I think the move to 44%, which is where they've sat now, was a very, very clear indication that they've seen and learnt enough and they really like the Premier League. And the whole time, and it's a look, there are similarities with the Fenway Sports Group and Liverpool. It's a syndicate. It's a syndicate that has sort of grown and shrunk and grown again with time as people have come in and come out, some with very small shareholdings. I think one of the things that I've sort of picked up quite recently, actually, even after writing that story, was that initially it was a bit of a punt. And, you know, the York family said, yeah, you know, go for it. They didn't put much money in themselves. They went quite widely, and some people were putting in quite small amounts for that initial 10% stake, and maybe even the next when they went to the next jump. when it became clear that, no, we really want to take over this club and we have a timetable to do so, we have this option which we can exercise by January 2024, they were streamlining the group. So they were sort of almost weeding out some of those smaller guys and going for more sort of serious, biggest investors into the group to make it manageable and to also give people like, we want to see the color of your money. Like, do you really want to do this? Do you want to come on this journey with us? You know, 5-10 million is not probably enough. We need a sort of significant investment because this is going to be expensive. That's where we're at. I mean, we know some of the names in this group. Peter Lowies, I think, is an interesting name. I think he's probably put a big chunk in. He's from the Westfield shopping center clan, big football fans, big, huge, you know, Australian company. They bankrolled, his father bankrolled Australia's bid for the World Cup in 2022. Chad Hurley, co-founder of YouTube. Nick Swinburne's another interesting guy. He's a sort of English-born online entrepreneur. And there's a few other names that we're sort of picking up that we're not quite ready to reveal yet because we're not sort of meant to. But look, it's an interesting group.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
So it's an interesting group, Phil. It's got 44% as a minority shareholder. It's got some very determined individuals, as Matt mentioned, because I don't think you found YouTube and do everything with YouTube if you don't have ambition, or Westfield or whatever it may be. How is the group perceived amongst the other 56%?
Well, they would tell you publicly, Brad Rosani and 49ers Enterprises, that the relationship is healthy and it's very positive. And actually, if you look back at the piece we did, Matt and I, a few weeks ago, it was the only quote of note that we obviously contacted them and asked them to comment on where the takeover was at, how the land lay. It was the only quote of note, only comment they were willing to make, was that the relationship between Brad Rosani and the 49ers was positive and healthy and constructive and everything else. There's no doubt at all, though, from speaking to people, that the situation is causing complications. And it's not purely the relationship that's causing complications, it's also the state of play with Leeds United, where they are in the table at the moment. When we first wrote about the option that 49ers Enterprises have, we were told that the valuation of the club would be £475 million. I should say that there were people involved who disputed that exact figure, but nobody kind of disputes that the club are valued at around about £500 million, you know, half a billion pounds. Obviously, the 49ers have paid a lot of money already because they're up to 44%. And what the actual final buyout price would be exactly, we'll probably never know. But needless to say, if Leeds were to get relegated, and there is a serious chance of that this season, then they're not going to be worth £500 million in the EFL. So one of the things that has been very much under discussion has been what happens if they go down, you know, because as we understood it in that initial agreement for the option for them to buy Leeds, there was no contingency for relegation simply because nobody was envisaging that was the club they were going to buy, you know, a club who went down into the EFL. And they have grand plans in the background for developing Elland Road, which is massively in need of an upgrade, you know, both in terms of size and in terms of the qualities of the facilities. It's a fantastic ground, and it probably is, you know, I think best ground in the country because of how rough and ready it is. But if you're the 49ers, if you're trying to be a modern Premier League club, it's not the ground you need. You know, it needs to be bigger. It needs to be more modern. But that becomes very difficult, stroke impossible to do in the EFL. And also, as Matt said, you know, in this group of investors who've come together with 49ers Enterprises, and I think we reckon it might be a group of, you know, 15 to 20 tops, something like that, you'll have people whose enthusiasm for buying in is naturally going to be lower if they're thinking that Leeds might not be in the Premier League. I think as this project was put together, the idea was, as in when we buy out Radrizzani, we get a Premier League football club.
You're nodding, Matt.
Yeah, I agree.
There must be panic. There must be panic.
Yes. Yeah, they'd never say that word, would they? I think that there's a few issues going on here. I think the biggest is definitely this price issue. You could, looking here now, it seems like a mistake, right? That they did not get this conversation nailed down right at the outset. You know, what's a Championship price? What's a Premier League price? You'd have thought they'd have done that. But I think there was this sense that once we got in, we'd be okay because we're Leeds, right? It's taken us a long time, but once we get in there and we have that access to Premier League TV money, all our problems go away because we are clearly a top 10 commercial team, top 10 match day sort of team. We have international following. We're going to do fine commercially, right? So I think there was perhaps a little, I mean, arrogance might be the wrong word, but complacency, I don't know, maybe just sort of, you know, a feeling that we just had to get into the Premier League and then everything will be okay. And I think some of that, if blame is the right word, it's on both sides. I think some is perhaps around the 49ers and some is around Radrizzani, who I think just thought, I'm going to deliver this amazing thing, promotion. My job is sort of done. Then the next bit is almost easy. The re-establishment of Leeds United as a top tier team. And no one really wanted to have that tricky conversation about, well, you know, that there's sort of like a big six and there's a sort of 14, and the 14 should probably always be thinking about maybe a relegation every sort of 5 to 10 years and what the plan is. And I don't think they had that conversation.
What I find quite interesting about this and this plan, and but also a plan for being in the Premier League, Phil, is that Brentford only got promoted the year after Leeds, right? So Leeds went up and then Brentford went up. So if I'm part of the 49ers enterprise and maybe new to the football side of things, I'm looking at Brentford and thinking, well, how the hell haven't we done that? Particularly bearing in mind the reliance on data and analytics that Brentford use, which is something you could definitely tap into from the 49ers side of things, because their analytics department has delivered them a squad that has got to a Super Bowl and two or three NFC championships over the past 4 or 5 years, when all the time they've suffered. I mean, they've lost all four quarterbacks this year, which takes some doing. But that's the way they have managed their player roster. It has been a phenomenal piece of work, actually.
Precisely, and that's US sport, isn't it? You know, that is one of the things that's fundamental in US sport is the application of data. And okay, it has developed massively in England and in English football too. But I think that sort of modernization or different look at things is exactly what you'd expect the 49ers to bring over.
And have Leeds been tapping into that 49ers expertise?
It's always been very hard to tell. And I have to say, when you ask Pragmarati about this, you don't always get a huge amount of detail about it. It's been very hard to tell. The 49ers spend a lot of time in Leeds and they've essentially audited the club. You know, they've done due diligence on different departments. You will have groups of staff from San Francisco, from the States, who will appear at Elland Road. And they've started to get to the point where they know the place inside out. How much interaction there's been, say, on a medical front, you know, or data front, has always been very difficult to tell. And it's not as if Leeds don't have a medical department, don't have data analysis partnerships and everything else. But I think the 49ers or 49ers enterprises would certainly seek to enhance that and to use more of it. On the subject of Brentford, the way I always look at this is that Brentford have had two really good seasons, you know, and going to stay up this year. But where will they be in 5 years' time? Will they be a Premier League club still who've strengthened and developed, or will they have regressed in the way that is very easy to do in the Premier League, no matter the best of intentions, and, you know, been relegated again or got sucked back into that area? There's no doubt that potential at Leeds is bigger than it is down in West London. But Leeds have the
constant but Leeds don't have that structure, I suppose, and that's my point. And if you come in as an investment arm, you are looking to implement some kind of structure, both on and off the field. And I'm just wondering how much structure they have put in place or have been allowed to put in place, given that they are still the minority shareholder.
Well, I think both Phil and I. I'll let Phil jump in. I think you've asked the key question, right? It's the complexity of being a 44% shareholder. You're not in charge.
Yeah, and I don't think the structure at Leeds has the 49ers' fingerprints all over it at all. You know, a lot of the people at the top of the club, so Victor Orta, director of football, and Angus Kinnear, chief executive, have been with Radrizzani right from the very start, from 2017, before the 49ers were properly on the scene. But there's a kind of legacy at Leeds as well. And you see this in Elland Road, and you see this in the fact that the training ground they have at Thorpe Arch, which was absolutely state of the art and ahead of its time when it was opened, you know, 20 years ago, is no longer that. Whereas other clubs around them have got up to speed and moved with the times and developed very rapidly, Leeds on a lot of fronts have been left behind, you know, and that's the story of Elland Road itself. You know, great rough and ready ground as it is, anybody coming over from, say, the NFL, as the 49ers have, would look at it and say, well, this needs to be like the Etihad, you know, this needs to be like Anfield. Actually, this needs to be like about 10 to 15 grounds in the Premier League. It needs to change. So without a doubt, the structure could be broader, but I don't think the structure as it stands at the moment is the 49ers as they would want it. It's very much as it has been since Radrizzani came in.
Just on the ground, and then I'll come back to the football side of things. We'll do that in the next part. But on the ground, are there plans ready to go on redevelopment? Because what always strikes me when going to Elland Road, and I'm no town planner or architect, obviously, but it, given the space around it, it actually appears, it would appear to me, one of the easier ones, if you have the financial muscle, to redevelop. I mean, it's not got a canal one side or a train line or a, you know, right in the heart of there is a community, but there is space around it.
There is, on two sides in particular. They don't need to develop the East Stand because the East Stand is already as big as it needs to be, but they have council land behind the North Stand and the West Stand where they can easily move back. And, you know, the footprint is there. Where they can't is behind the South Stand, where actual Elland Road runs, you know, within a few feet of it. And unless that was to go underground or you were to find some alternative solution for it, that stand can't really change, but it can be upgraded and it can be developed and it can be smartened up. Financial muscle is precisely the point. You know, it's the plans are there, the ideas are there, they know what they want to do with it in theory, but it needs to be paid for. And you would be talking, you know, £100 million plus. I actually don't know exactly what it would cost to do those three sides, but it would be in excess of that. I think the potential for it is fine, but funding and, I guess, willingness is going to depend on this takeover going through.
Just a final one on this, and then we'll move on. Has the way Todd Bowley has gone about his business at Chelsea had any effect on Americans who are looking to invest or who have already invested in football clubs, Matt? Do you think? Do you know? Is it difficult to tell?
I think it's a little bit difficult to tell. I think everybody in the football industry, Brits, Americans, the lot, are looking at Chelsea and you know, raising some eyebrows. It's not just so much the amount of money spent. I guess it's what's the strategy, the fact that it appears to have changed from summer to winter window. Who's really in charge? I think that's another one I often hear. It was very much Bowley's show, and then Clearlake appeared to sort of want to remind everybody actually they're putting most of the money in. And, you know, how many directors of football and technical people have you got? Who's running your recruitment? It's more they've moved fast, they've moved aggressively. It seems a bit confusing. What are they doing? Where does this go? And I think a lot of people, including Americans, think they overpaid.
Could I just make a quick point on Bowley? He and Radrizzani got to know each other quite quickly when he bought in at Chelsea. And at the time, this didn't seem particularly significant, or at least it didn't twig with me. But when Leeds were selling Rafinha in the summer, Rafinha only wanted to go to Barcelona. That was it. You know, there was no... Had Barcelona not been able to do it, then yeah, he might have considered elsewhere. But that was the only move he was after, and that was the move he got in the end. But that deal was incredibly complicated and really difficult to get done because Barcelona were essentially a shambles. But when it came to Chelsea, Chelsea had a deal in place for Rafinha and had literally just said, we'll pay the money for him. You know, just we will pay the cash. Whereas you thought, okay, well, that's just a big Premier League club saying he's a target of ours and we want to sign him. Actually, what you've started to see as time's gone on is that Chelsea's mindset just seems to be, we'll have him. You know, and if it costs X, then it costs X, and we'll do this, that, and the other. And it almost seems to me that the Rafinha deal was kind of precursor for what was coming there.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
That links us on to two transfers and who's really in charge at Leeds, and we'll do that next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Bear in mind what we've talked about with the 49ers enterprises, and we'll come on to he'll replace Jesse Marsh in just a moment. But they've had an American head coach. They've mm-hmm. got one American assistant who they brought in very recently, just before Jesse Marsh went. They've brought in American players, and the mm-hmm. Tyler Adams signing had a huge effect on Leeds' yeah. Or the social media interest in Leeds United from America. So there has been a distinct American flavor to a lot of the people they have targeted over the last 18 months.
There has, you know, and I wonder if, you know, if that's accent design, bit of both. There's a sort of, I was thinking about this the other day, that there's a real opportunity here, or there seems to be a real opportunity here, you know, kind of winding their sails if they stay up, that Leeds sort of become America's team. Now, we've sort of had this sort of conversation before. You know, Fulham, I think, were probably quite a good example when they had this sort of run of American players where the huge burgeoning audience for Premier League football in the States, yeah, they're gonna pull for a team with guys they see on the US men's national team. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and that has happened before. And if there is a team that basically has their midfield, you'd be thinking, I want Leeds to win. I'm gonna watch Leeds. Now, does that make them Leeds United fans? Yeah, maybe for a time being. But history would suggest when those players move on, many of the fans will move on as well. But look, there's an opportunity. There's definitely an opportunity there, particularly with new viewers, new people are coming to the game all the time off the back of the Wrexham show, Ted Lasso. We hear it all the time. The NBC's numbers are really, really good. They're only going to get better because of, you know, the whole growth of the sport in the States. World Cup's coming in 2026. That's why they're all here. That's why they're investing loads in women's soccer, you name it. The sport is booming. So there's an opportunity, definitely. I'd just be intrigued to see how much. I think the 49ers are pretty savvy sort of guys. I think they'd really like to lean into that. I just don't sense that Radrizzani-led Leeds is.
Accident or design was a good phrase that Matt used, because to take Marsh as an example, in no way, despite it looking like it would be an obvious connection, in no way was he the 49ers' choice. You know, he was Victor Orta's choice. They'd been in contact for 2 years before he was appointed. It was Arthur who'd sought him out, because he always had this thing with Bielsa, where Bielsa was on a 12-month deal. You never quite knew when you might have to replace him. So you always had contingencies in play, you know, for who you would go for if it, at short notice, it was a case of, right, we need a new head coach. Again, with the players, it's been a kind of mixture of factors. There are certain players who, despite what Marsh said, you know, about them being our signings rather than his signings, i.e. the club signings, you know, Rasmus Christensen from Salzburg, you know, very much a player he knew. And likewise, Max Verber, who came in a few weeks back. And then others who he knows, has either worked with previously or knows from the US scene. So Tyler Adams being one, Brendan Aronson another. And Weston McKennie, who's just arrived on loan from Juventus. I think there have been others where the club have taken a broader look themselves. So like Jorginho Ruta from Hoffenheim, one of the players that Marsh was very interested in last month up front was Huang at Wolves, who he'd worked with at Leipzig. But Leeds' attitude was that, you know, Huang was well into his career, and at this stage, it's hard to say if he was a particularly good investment. Whereas Ruta is 20 years old, you know, very much emerging, had a couple of good years at Hoffenheim, much better in terms of future potential and resale value. A few people have asked me the question this week of what on earth is the point in spending, you know, or committing £70 million worth of transfers to a manager plus an assistant in Chris Armas and then sacking him? I think the answer to that is that partly it looks odd. On the other hand, Leeds feel that the players they're signing, like Tyler Adams, for example, are just fundamentally good footballers. So they've signed players who, if whether it's Marsh or somebody else, the coach should be able to make something of them, you know.
Yeah, it's not mad if you are running the director of football head coach system correctly, then actually it isn't mad, because you're building a squad that you want to be in a certain way, and it's about getting the right man to get the tune out of them.
For sure. So the proof is in the pudding. Now you appoint another coach, and does it get better? And if it does, what you say is, we had the players, we just didn't have the coach. If it doesn't get better, then you start to ask, actually, is the squad good enough? But it certainly looks like it. I was just going to say, in terms of higher up the chain, when it comes to the transfers, again, you don't have one party making a decision on this. And it is complicated because of the impact that any purchase of player, and obviously Leeds paying installments like a lot of clubs do, so the cost of those installments further down the line, which, you know, if the 49ers are in charge, they have to bear, but, you know, at that point, it is a constant topic of discussion, this. And to use Reuter as an example, there's a suggestion at one point that they might loan him till the end of the season with an obligation and then do him permanently in the summer. But in the end, it was decided, no, we'll sign him now. You know, we'll pay the money now, the upfront fee as we have to, and we'll get it done. And I was told that the 49ers were, you know, very active in saying, no, this should be a permanent transfer here and now. You know, that's how it is, and that's how it's been discussed.
And just one other on their transfers. Is there a feeling that they've signed a lot of players who do very similar things?
You could certainly say that in midfield.
Midfield and slightly further forward, you could argue, couldn't you, really?
Yeah, I think if Jorginho Rutter ends up being a nine, which is where he wants to play, then you kind of add a player there in a position where they do need... I mean, Rodrigo's out for 2 months now, broken ankle. Bamford has been, you know, fighting for the best part of 18 months to get back to full fitness. It's been a real struggle for him. I think what became very odd about this squad was that you had wide players in it, essentially. You had players who could play as wide forwards, but were also kind of wingers, in a setup with Marsh that just had no width and didn't, you know, he didn't want any width, it didn't require any width, it didn't really show any width. Going further back in midfield, I think McKennie plays further forward than Adams, but they're both very kind of dynamic, or at least, you know, box to box and aggressive. I don't think actually the balance of the squad is bad. And I don't think that the players who are in it are poor players either. I think they do have a decent number of good footballers, but they absolutely need another plan, another tactical plan. And it's going to have to work really quickly.
So on to the next manager, who could very well be appointed by the time you listen to this. So if that's the case, then just read Phil's article on The Athletic on the new manager, because I'm sure it'll be up there. Given, Matt, the discussion there on signings and how collective the discussions have had to be on some signings, you would imagine that the 49ers enterprises will want to be heavily involved. Bearing in mind they're also looking to the future in who is appointed next.
Yeah, I think this manager decision, it's going to be a great indication of the state of play, right? And so was the window, where you have the next ownership group who I think have been waiting patiently to take over, and they've been managing, I think, their key relationship, which is Andrea Bedrizzani. You know, finding the right time to sort of ask him to move on in the right way, with the right respect, ideally with the team in the right division. You know, a right time for them and their, you know, ownership group. And there's lots of sort of kind of macro and micro things to worry about, their interest rates. And is this good a time to buy? And have we overpaid? And all that, lots of things in their head. But they had to get the window right. And I think there was clearly a, well, we need to do something. We will release the funds. And this manager decision. Do they trust Victor Orta, their current sort of director of football? Do they have plans for him, designs for him? I don't know. How much say are they going to have over this? Because I would argue they need to have pretty much the say. And it needs to be, but then you have this politeness, this Andrea, you know, we need to have a say here. We need to, who are you going to pick? Well, can we have a look again? Can we cross that one out? Can we have one on? It's going to be tough. There's a personal element to this story. And it is Parag Murata and Andrea Reggiani working out how to sort of do this very diplomatic. We're kind of the next boss, right?
I think that the decision on this, without it being final, will come down to Orta. You know, it is Orta who has drawn together a shortlist of options. It's Orta who will lead discussions. It's Orta at the end of it, as he has before, who will advise on who the best option is. And clearly at that point, it's then down to Radrizzani / the 49ers to decide if they take that advice. it's hard to see why they wouldn't take that advice, because if you're not taking the advice of your director of football, then you should absolutely get another one whose advice you would take. So while it won't be Otter who signs the paperwork and makes the decision, I think what you'll find is that he will go back to them and say, look, this is who we should go for, or these are your two options, you know, take your pick.
And it will be, or those two options will be, if you want to give yourself a bit of room for manoeuvre.
The one that has been sticking out is Andoni Iraola at Rayo Vallecano in Spain. They are doing very, very well on a small budget over there. And I think even aside from the results, the more and more attention is being paid to the way Iraola has built the team there, the tactics he's gone for. He has a background of playing for Bielsa, of studying Bielsa. He's not wholly wedded to it. We'd actually spoke to him for a piece about Bielsa's motherball sessions, which he used to do at Bilbao. And I said to him, you know, do you do them as a coach? And he said, well, no, because, you know, they're absolutely horrific. And while Bielsa can crack the whip and say, everybody get on with it, and the players say, yeah, fine. You know, if I'm doing that, most of them will probably say, not a chance. You know, I don't want to do this. It's too hard and it's too much. But he did say, you know, he took on a lot of what he'd seen, I think, at close hand of Bielsa, he tapped into and thought about. Seems like a very clever guy, very intelligent coach, undoubtedly up and coming and very young at 40. So he's been one to watch this week.
Well, I mean, and it'd be really interesting because, again, it'd be another young La Liga Spanish talent coming to the Premier League, you know. Yeah. And the others aren't so young, but Emery, Lopetegui, they both had an immediate impact on their clubs. I think it'd be really interesting if they go that way.
Matt, Phil, we will end it there. Thank you very much for that today. For more dedicated club coverage, subscribe to The Athletic by taking advantage of our current offer of £1.99 a month for the first 12 months. Phil's article on whoever the new head coach is, will be up there at some point, I'm sure, over the coming days. Just head to theathletic.com/footballpod for that subscription offer. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow.
The Athletic.